And we're holding on page 170 in Bhavabhasra, Oistei Aleph. We learned about Elimelech and their whole family and everything that happened with them. And the last thing we mentioned was Rav Chanan bar Rava said that Elimelech, that a number of the characters in Megillas Rus are actually brothers. Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, and Salmon, the father of Boaz, and Pliny Almoni, the original Goyal who didn't want to take up the responsibility and left it to Boaz, and Naomi's father, all of them are sons of Nachshon ben Aminadab. So now the Gemara continues with something else by the same Tanav. The mother of Avraham, her name was Amaslai bas Karnavoy. And the mother of Haman, now why is it important for us to know the name of Avraham's mother? Rashbam explains, like this, for example, we know the names of the mothers of Yitzchak and Yaakov, Sarah and Rivka, respectively. The Minim would ask us, well, then what's Avraham's mother's name? It doesn't say anywhere in Chumash. So we need to be able to know a name to be able to tell them. So then, by the way, the Gemara also mentions Haman's mother, even though why would the Minim bother asking about her? Because they have the same first name. Similarly, with the rest of them that the Gemara is going to bring, is all these are figures who appear in Tanakh, or we have reason to expect that we should know their names, and we don't, and therefore the Minim are going to ask us about them. So therefore, like this, we have an answer. The Rimi Gash makes another point as well. He says that the Minim are going to ask us what these names are, and we're going to tell them based on what we have the Kabbalah over here in the Gemara. Now, therefore, we're going to tell them, you know what? So you see that even something so basic like that, you need a Kabbalah, you need a Torah Shebaal Peh in order to know that kind of thing. So that'll help them realize, maybe that'll motivate them to realize, you know what? We need a Torah Shebaal Peh for other things as well. We can't just be like the Minim and the Tzedukim and whatnot and believe only in Torah Shebaal Chesav. It doesn't work. So that's another reason. So the mother of Avraham is named Amaslai Bas Karnavoy. There's a well-known thing that says in Sfarim that saying her name is a segula for Rafur. For a sick person, I'm not sure where that comes from. Anyway, Ima de Homon Amaslai Bas Eravda. The mother of Homon is also named Amaslai, but her father's name was Eravda. The Simonach, so your Simon, which is which, you can remember Tomei, Tomei, Toher, Toher. The Tomei, one Homon, his grandfather's name is Eravda, which is from the word Orev, which was a raven or a crow, which is a non-kosher bird. In fact, not just a non-kosher bird, we had earlier in this perek, when we had a couple of stories that involved an Erev, we made the point that it's a cruel creature, a Livnei Erev, Asher Yikro, Asher must provide for the baby ravens because their parents won't provide for them. So a raven is always a symbol of cruelty. And here we see, says Eon Yaakov, you see that because of that thanks to Haman, all of his children were also hanged, and in fact, their flesh was eaten by ravens that were flying around. So that helps you remember that Haman's grandfather, that Haman's mother's father's name was Eravda. So Tomei goes together with Tomei. Toher goes with Toher. Avraham, who was Toher, his grandfather's name is Karnavoy. So Rashbam explains the word Kar means specifically fat sheep. So sheep are kosher animals. So then Avraham is a Toher person. And Yaakov also adds the point that it means the sheep of Nevoi, where Nevoi, Nevoi itself is the name of it, is the name of a Getchke mentioned in Yeshaya. It's also Har Nevoi, but there's also the very closely related to that is the name Nevoyus, which is the name of one of Abraham's grandsons from Yishmael's eldest is named Nevoyus, but the Pasuk mentions that Ele Nevoyus, the rams from the area of Nevoyus, were exceptionally good quality. So therefore, Abraham's grandfather being Kar Nevoi, suggesting the sheep and the rams from Nevoyus, represents like the ultimate in goodness and greatness and Tahara. There's a different explanation. Some Rishonim have the Girsa Kar Nevoi with a kuf, and they explain that a Kar Nevoi is a type of kosher bird. So in any case, the idea is the same thing, that the Torah creature goes together with the Torah person, Avraham. Next, Ime de David, who was David's mother, and again, you have the same kind of question, the names of all the other kings of Yehuda, their mothers are mentioned in the Psukim. Each time there's a new king from Malchus Beis David, each time the Pasuk says, V'shem Imo, the name of his mother, was such and such. By David, we don't have that. So what was the name? So again, the Minim are going to ask. And the answer is her name was Nitzeves Bas Adoyle. We talked about yesterday the well-known story from a Medrash about how in his old age, Yishai decided he shouldn't be married to her anymore, because what if he's apostle, and therefore he was going to have relations with his maidservant, and the whole thing that developed from there of how in the end he did in fact unknowingly have relations with Nitzeves, and she conceived, and David was born from that. So Nitzeves Bas Adol Shmo, her name is Nitzeves Bas Adol. By the way, as far as this, that Avraham and Haman both had both of their mothers, we said, had the same name. Amaslai, there's an interesting explanation from Ablevi Yitzchak that had his father on it. He points out there's actually a number of opposite parallels between Avraham and Haman. Among them, you see that they even have two letters of their name in common. The last two letters of Avraham are the first two letters of Haman. And he explains why by Haman it's an open man, and by Avraham it's a closed man. It has to do with Tumah versus Kedusha. And you have another example, as the Gemara tells us in Megillah, Haman didn't just have the 10 sons who were hanged with him. The Gemara in Megillah tells us that he actually had 208 sons, because the Pasuk says that he was boasting about the Roiv Vonav. The Roiv is amount to 208. Well, Avraham had the one main son, Yitzchak, the one that Kibi Yitzchak Yikar Lachazara, and Yitzchak's name is Gematria 208. So therefore, so you have that, so you have those, and you have various other connections, and then you have various other connections and opposites between Avraham and Haman, which is why then very, very significantly over here, they both have the same mother's name as well. Okay, so the mother of David is Nitzeves Bas Adol Shma, Ime de Shimshin Tzlopenis. The name of Shimshin's mother, and again, you have the Pasuk tells us, you have a whole chapter about her talking with the Malach, and her running to get her husband, and so on and so forth, but it never mentions her name. So therefore, you should know her name was Tzlopenis. Now, you have a Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim that mentions a family from Shevet Yehuda, and it says, V'shem Achoy, it mentions the names of some men from that family, and then it says, V'shem Achoysam, the name of their sister, Hatzlelponi. Which is basically the same as Tzlopenis of our Gemara over here. The Medrash actually explains that the reason that's not necessarily her real name. The reason she's called that in the Pasuk and here, Tzlel means literally a shadow. So it refers to a Malach, who usually you don't see a Malach in the flesh, but you see him at most as a shadow. But she had this chus to see one with her own eyes. And Tzlel, in fact, the double lamed represents that she saw him twice. Because in the Pesukim, he came to her once and told her you're going to have a baby and you have to follow the dinim of a nazir, etc. And then when she tells Manoach, and Manoach asks that the Malach should come back and explain to them more what's going on over here, and the Malach comes back to her, and so she actually sees the Malach and talks with him twice. And then Poinis is Meloshin Pona, as in she turned to him and saw him face to face and talked with him. So in the schus of that, so it's because of that, in recognition of that she's called Tzlopenis, or in the Pasuk Hatzlopeni. Anyway, so that was his mother's name. Ba'achose, and Shimshon's sister was named Nashik or Nashion. Different gusos. Now, why do we have to mention the sister? Rashbam says, once we're mentioning the mother, we mention the sister as well. Marsha points out, I mean, we don't see it. There doesn't seem to be any implication in the Psukim that Shimshon had a sister. The way it seems in the Psukim, he was an only child. But yes, the Gemara is telling over here, you should know that he actually had a sister as well. Now, beforehand, now his parents were barren before that, the Ishtar Kodav Aloyalada. So we have to understand that after she was able to have a baby, Shimshon, then she was able to have another child as well, a daughter. Maybe Pasha said that Manoach, and she should be able to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Pru Ravu. If he only has a son, after all, he's not Mekayim that. But in any case, the Gemara takes it as a given that he had a sister, and here her name was Nashik or Nashlan. There are Mephoshim that point out actually at the end of Shimshon's life, when you have the whole story over there, how he's blinded, he's in the temple of the Plishtim, and they're all celebrating that their public enemy number one has finally been captured, etc. And then he pushes on the two main pillars and knocks down the whole building and kills thousands of Plishtim, and himself also Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim. The Pasuk says afterwards that the Pasuk says, Vayerdu Echov v'chol beis avihu. His brothers and all of his father's household came to find his body and bury it, because he's a mess mitzvah after all. It's a big mitzvah. You have to realize, by the way, it was a big risk they're taking. I mean, even though many of the Plishtim, including all the leaders and everything, had just been killed, nevertheless, it still probably wasn't that safe to sneak into enemy territory, but they did. They went on Mesiras Nefesh for that. Anyway, Mephoshim point out the words beis avihu may hint at his sister, that she joined in the search for her brother's body as well. So that would indicate that he had a sister, and so the Gemara is telling us her name. So the Gemara says, "Am I not the minim? Why is it important for us to know all these details?" So the Tshuva Saminim, like we said, to answer the minim, the minim are going to ask, how do you know the names for these? These are such important figures in Tanakh, shouldn't you know the names? And we can answer them, yes, as a matter of fact, we do know. And as the Rimi Gash says also, not only this way we can answer them, but we can also tell them, look, you realize you minim who have only Torah Shabbat have no idea of this whole of any of these names. So you should realize that Torah, you need a Torah Shabbat Peh in order to be able to understand even such simple things. Okay. V'omer Rav Chanan bar Rava omer Rav. Then Rav Chanan bar Rava says another statement in the name of Rav, speaking also of Avraham Avinu. Eser shonin nechbash Avraham Avinu. For 10 years, Avraham was in jail. Now, what happened? Rashbam says two possibilities. One is that Nimrod put him in jail, because he's going and spreading knowledge about the Eibishter. Vayikra Shem, B'Shem Avraham, Vayikra Shem, B'Shem Hashem Kelo, and Nimrod wasn't going to tolerate that. The other explanation, Rashbam says that Terach, his father, put him in jail after the famous story where Avraham broke all of Terach's idols and claimed the big idol smashed all of them, as we all know the story from Cheder. Then Terach got mad at him and put him in jail. So according to that, he was in jail. So according to that, it was Terach put him in jail. Some Mephoshim say it can really be a combination of both, really. I mean, Terach was mad at him and brought him to Nimrod, and the Medrash actually mentions a whole debate that Avraham had with Nimrod. Nimrod says to Avraham, you know, here in this country, we worship fire, so you should also worship fire. And Avraham tells him, yeah, but water can put out fire. All right, so then worship water, but the clouds can carry the water. And he goes on and on like that until it gets to the point. So Nimrod says, so fine, so bow down to a person. I'm the ruler of the world. Bow down to me. And Avraham says, yeah, but a person doesn't live forever, so he's not the greatest power either. And at that point, Nimrod loses his patience and says, you know what, fine, but you know what, a person can also be destroyed by fire. So then fine, you didn't want to bow down to my god fire, so then you can be thrown into the fire. So according to that, it's both. In other words, that first Terach kept him in jail for some years, and then after that, he handed him over to Nimrod, and he was in jail for more years after that as well.
Was he in the cave also?
So there's also a Medrash that say that he was in a cave for a period of time, because the Medrash says that when Nimrod was told by his astrologers that there's going to be a boy born who's going to overthrow your kingdom and your religion and all that, and they tell him it's going to be Terach's son, so he goes to Terach and demands to hand over the baby, and Terach says Terach fobs him off with an excuse. So yeah, then also he hid baby Avraham in a cave. So that Nimrod's soldiers wouldn't get him. Yeah, there's that as well. Terach, according to that, Terach and Terach's wife, whatever. Yeah, I must lie, as we just said before. Yeah. Terach's wife hid him, whatever. Yeah. So
there's a video for young Abraham.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, how much of that is true? I don't know. But yeah, there are midrashim that talk about these various details. One point about that, by the way, is, Given that idea that Avraham was living in a cave for the beginning of his life, it helps us realize, you know, when Avraham, when we know that Avraham at three began discovering about the Eibishter, and he sees the sun, and he starts thinking, is that Hashem? And he realizes then it sets or whatever. Your average kid, you know, he sees the sun rising and setting every day from when he's old enough to understand, so it never makes much of an impression on him. For Avraham, if he's underground or in a cave or whatever the first couple of years, when he first sees the sun, then Taka can have a much more greater impact on him, and Taka starts questioning.
Is it 10 years or 3 years?
No, so according to that, in other words, there's different ages when he started discovering Hashem. We know that there's a medrash that says Ben Gimel Shonim Hikar Avraham's Vodoy, that Amram says that he was 40. There's another medrash that says he was 48. The vort is, in other words, there were different stages. He first began discovering Hashem. He first started his quest when he was 3. As the Rambam says, Kivin Shenigmal Eisam Zeh, as soon as this mighty one was weaned, when usually a baby in those days was weaned at 2 years old, then he starts questioning and probing and trying to figure out who runs the world. But then he got more of a complete understanding of it when he was 40, and even more so when he's 48. Yeah. Okay, so for 10 years he was in jail, according to these various possibilities. Marsha points out, you know, a reason for it might be, given that he was first starting to discover Hashem at 10, then, you know, they also, even as cool as the Goyim were in those days, they weren't necessarily going to punish a person when he's a child. So they would have had him in jail for a total of 10 years from 3 to 13, and now they would have figured he's 13, he's old enough to know better, and if he's not going to listen to us, then we're going to throw him into the fire. So the 10 years break up Shloisha b'Kusa v'Shiva b'Kadru, 3 years in a place called Kusa and another 7 in a place called Kadru. The point of this is, Rashbam says, it shows us the greatness of Avraham Avinu, that he, even as a child, was saying he was in jail for 10 years, And still he didn't let that discourage him, and he became what he became. Like Mar says, Reb Dimi min ha'hada, masni ifcha. Reb Dimi min ha'hada learns the other way around. It was 7 years in Kosa and 3 years in Tadlu. An interesting point in this connection that we're mentioning Kosa. First of all, there are Mephoshim who explain, I think the Eben Ezra explains, that Kosa is actually the city where Avraham Avinu was born. The Gemara is going to identify that Ur Kasdim, where Avraham was saved from the furnace, is an area in the city of Kosa. So the Mephoshim will explain that actually that was Avraham Avinu's birthplace. A very interesting point in that connection, actually, Rabbi Avigdor Miller mentions it in some of his writings. We know in later Jewish history you have the Kosim, and they're called that because they originated from that city of Kosa and from nearby areas. So we know the story of them, Sancheirav brought them to repopulate the land of the Ten Shvatim after the Ten Shvatim had been taken into Golos, and at first they were over to Avodah Zarah like all the other nations, and then they were attacked by lions, and then they became quasi-Gerim, and it's a big machloikus all over Shas whether they ever became true Gerim, until eventually in the times of Remeir they found they're worshipping Avodah Zarah, but we see at least there was a period of time when they were at least semi-Gerim. So Rav Miller makes an interesting point. Maybe this is actually as a result, hundreds and hundreds of years later, because from Avraham until the time when the Kosim were brought to Eretz Yisrael was well over 1,000 years, but it could be, in other words, enough influence of Avraham lingered in that area, so much so that the Goyim from there are more predisposed to accepting Yiddishkeit, at least in some distorted way, more so than the other nation, more so than the other people from other cities around there where Avraham didn't have that impact from Kinvaizon. So it goes to show, in other words, according to that, then the impact that a tzaddik like Avraham Avinu can have on a place even well over 1,000 years later. So the Gemara continues. Omer of Chista, Ibra Ze'ira de Kosa, the Ibra Ze'ira, Rashbam says this is the name of the place, Rabbi Gershom says it means the little crossing, in Kosa, in the city of Kosa, Zehu Ur Kasdim, that is the place called Ur Kasdim, that is where Avraham Avinu was thrown into the furnace, meaning then the Naftamina of it is if a person comes to that place, this Ibra Ze'ira de Kosa, then he has to make the bracha, Baruch She'osem Nisim La'Abesenu B'mokam Azeh. Actually, Mephoshim talk about, would it be that bracha? Would it be the bracha Baruch Shas and Netzel Tzadikim? There's a few different possibilities what exactly the nusach of the bracha would be. But in any case, the point is, the Gemara mentions in brachas that we have various places. You see nisim that happened to the Jewish people. You see the place of Frias Yamsuf. You see the place of the place where Og threatened to throw a giant mountain on the Jewish people, and several other places, and you have to make a bracha, and you have also in Babel, there are the place where Daniel was thrown into the lion's den, the place where Hanani, Mishael, Azariah was thrown into the furnace, so now you should know another one of those places is Ur Kasdim, sort of Chista is identifying for us in terms of the geography of his times, where that is. The Gemara continues, but Omer Abchonen Bar Rava, here's another statement from Abchonen Bar Rava in the name of Rav, also about Avraham Avinu. Oisa Yom Shenifter Avraham Avinu Min HaOlam, on the day that Avraham Avinu passed away from this world, Omdu Kol Gdolei HaDor B'Shura. All the great people, all the leaders of the generation, all stood in a row, like the kind of row that they make by a Levaya to be Menachem Avol. And that's also where they make a Hesped. The Omru, when they said, Oiloi la Olam sha'ovad manhigoi, woe to the world that has lost its leader, the Oilo la Sfina sha'ovad kabarnita, and woe to the ship that has lost its captain. Literally kabarnita means a helmsman, the one who actually steers the ship. The word kabarnita is actually very distantly related to the English word governor. So it means the one who governs and steers the ship to go in the right direction. Why the double expression? So Marashah says like this: Avraham was perfect in both areas. And first of all, he was perfect in seichel and in midas. He was telling people about Hashem and telling them he's telling them about the seichel to understand intellectually that there is one Eibishter who runs the world. And also, he was teaching them the midas of the proper midas that a person should have as a result of that. So now they're saying, as far as the seichel, woe to the world that has lost its leader, who taught us the seichel, who taught us that there is a manhig, that there is in fact someone who runs the world. So now we don't have him anymore. And then Olav finish of Kabonita, the world is like a ship. We had all the stories at the beginning of the Perek, a bunch of several stories, Rabba Baba Hana, where a ship is a metaphor for a person going through the stormy seas of life, or more generally the world, doing that and being beset by waves and all kinds of things. So now when a ship loses its helmsman, the one who steers it, so now it doesn't know how to go straight anymore. The same way we don't have the one who's teaching us to go straight in Midas. So there's that. The Ion Yaakov brings over here another point as well. Avraham Avinu would daven for barren women that they should have children, and for sick people that they should feel better. Even ships in the sea would be saved in the schus of Avraham Avinu. So now woe to the world that lost its leader, who was helping all the sick people and all the barren people and whatever. And woe to the ship that has lost its helmsman, where now the ships are not going to have safe travels anymore when Avraham Avinu is not around to daven for them. There's a couple of other interesting explanations about the double expression. The Nitziv explains on it. He says each one of these positions has a mila to it. The manhig is somebody who has to have a lot of seichel. The helmsman of the ship doesn't really have to have so much seichel per se. But on the other hand, if you lose your manhig, you're not in immediate danger. But a ship without a helmsman, without somebody to steer it, is immediately in danger from the waves and the storms. So therefore, they're saying both. Avraham Avinu was the leader who guides us. And so now we're missing him in a way we could do without him, but he was leading us with his chokhmah, like Maharshal said, with his seichel. And then the flip side of that is we're now in imminent danger of capsizing and drowning, just like a ship is in immediate danger if it loses its helmsman. Then there's another Mefarish, the Iyei Hayom, has another interesting point about it. He says a leader basically looks down to the ground. A leader looks at the people around him to see what needs to be done for them. The one who steers the ship is more looking up to the sky towards the stars to navigate, because back then that's how they navigated, was by the stars. So therefore, they're saying Avraham Avinu had both of those advantages. He was looking down to earth to see what needs to be accomplished here on earth, and he's also looking up to Shemayim to see to make us realize that there's an Eibush there in the world and to follow him. So therefore, again, they're using this double expression on him that he had both of those milas, and now we're lacking that. Another statement from Rav Chanan bar Rava Omar Rav, the pasuk says that in David HaMelech's tefillah at the end of his life, the pasuk can describe there in Divrei Hayamim how David had made all the preparations for the building of the Beis Mikdash. He wasn't allowed to build it, but he made all the possible preparations. The pasuk can describe in Divrei Hayamim how he gathered everybody for a mass meeting, and he explained to them, I've already put aside huge amounts of treasures for the future of Beis Mikdash. Does anyone else want to donate? And the pasuk says many people donated very generously, and David was very happy, and that's when he said the tefillah Vayivorech David that we say every day in davening. But we also have the pasuk that we say that we say a few pesukim of it in davening, and then David continues on in Divrei Hayomim. Actually, the pasuk that we say in Revolot Tzion, Hashem, Shama Zos LaOlam, LeYetzer Machshavos Levava Mecha V'Achon Levava Meilacha. That's also part of that tefillah of David's. Hashem Alakei Avraham Yitzchak Yisrael Avisenu Shama Yeh. So in that tefillah, he says V'Amisnasei L'Chol L'Roish. That the Hashem raises up every kind of head. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Chanan bar Rava, Amar Rav, afilu resh gargusa min shmaya moitnile. Even a resh gargusa, his appointment is min hashemayim. A resh gargusa, Rashbam explains, is somebody in charge of the wells. So they would have wells or other water sources. They would have to take turns. Who gets to water their field on this day and who on that day? So it's a very minor appointment. You just have you have a couple of farmers that you're giving them instructions about who gets to use the water what day. Nevertheless, it's still a srara, it's still a position of leadership, and v'amisnase l'chol l'rosh, for anything, even for the tiniest position of authority, such as this resh gargusa, is from you, Hashem. Meaning, in other words, Maharsha says, some people have the notion that Hashem only pays attention to the big things, and Ozev Hashem Asa'aretz is a famous expression from the pasuk that Hashem doesn't pay attention to the little unimportant things here on earth. So no, even this, even the Reish Gargusa is also Min HaShemayim. Marshall says it also means that it also is a lesson for these individual leaders. The smallest position of leadership makes a person a responsibility that he has to now be poil on the people who he's above them and teach them the right way and then give them Torah l'shem shemayim. In fact, Marshall says, you know, we have the pasuk at the beginning of Nitzavim, after Nitzavim Ayim Kochem, you're all standing before Hashem, and it goes down to Ad Shoyev Nemecha. So Marshall says, the Shoyev Nemecha hints at the Reish Galgusa over here. Even if you're only a Shoyev Nemecha, your job is just to be a leader over people as far as water rights. Nevertheless, Atem Nitzav Mayim, you're still standing before Hashem, and you have a responsibility to teach the people who are below you, to teach them to follow in the ways of Hashem. So that's also Vamisnasya L'chol Roish, that you don't just have your position for yourself. You're given it Minashamayim, and you're given it so that you have a job to do, to be Mashpia on those who are, and then to be Mashpia on the people around you. Okay. So these were all several statements of Rav Chanan bar Rava, which the Gemara had brought in again on the face of it. Derech Grora, Agav Grora, because we had something about Elimelech and the other characters from Megillah Sus. So now, getting back to that story, we learned yesterday that what we said, why were what Elimelech and Machlon and Kilian were all Gdolei Ador and Parnosei Ador, so why were they punished? Why were they all dying Moab? So we said because they left Eretz Yisrael. Even though it was a time of famine, nevertheless, Reb Shimon is saying, following his Shitta, as we learned yesterday, that even when there's a famine, you can't leave Eretz Yisrael as long as there is food available for purchase, even if the prices are much higher than usual. So now the Gemara continues. Amra b'chir ba'oven, Amra b'shur ben karcha. No, pas v'sholem to say they left Eretz Yisrael just samazoi without having a valid reason. Shafilu motziv subin, even if they had only found bran to eat, lo yotzu, they still wouldn't have left. If they left, it must takabi, there really was no food available. The elam of neiman nenshu. So then, why were they punished? What choice do they have? The answer is shoyelam levakish rachmim al dordam v'le bikshu. They should have davened for rachmanus from the Eveshter for their generation, and they didn't do that. So therefore, this is why, according to this, this is why they were punished. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, pasuk in Yeshaya, bezakech, in your crying out, yatsiluch kibutzayich. They will save you. Those whom you gather. So Rashbam explains, when you cry out to Hashem to gather together all those who are dispersed, then you yourself will be saved. So in other words, if they had cried out to the Eibishter to have Rachmanus on that generation, then they themselves would have been saved, and instead they didn't do that, instead they left town. Marshall explains differently. The kibbutzayich, yeah, means the rabbi. So it means, bezakech, when you cry out, Yetziluch kibbutzayich, so you're davening on behalf of the kibbutz, on behalf of the tzibur, you yourself will be saved as a result of that, because I'm a vakash rachel machaberi, who nene tchila. So if they had davened for the dirt, then the Eibishter would have answered them first, and they would have found, like this, Reb Chiya Ba'oven is saying that they couldn't even find bran to eat. If they had davened for that, then they would have been answered first, and they would have had food, and so would everybody else. Instead, we're saying they missed the opportunity. There's an explanation, actually, that the vote is. Now, we learned earlier in the Masechta, the Megillas Rus begins by Hibimei Shvoit HaShoftim, and we learned earlier in the Masechta that it means it was a time when the people were judging their judges, because we said the judges themselves were corrupt, and when the judge would tell off a person that you're doing Averis, the person would answer back, you're doing even worse Averis. So then the vote is, in other words, and the Gemara had called, and in connection with Eir, the Gemara had called that a generation of Hevel. It's a generation of vanity and nothingness. So in other words, the vote is, they Taka weren't behaving the way they were supposed to. Nonetheless, the Gemara is making the point over here that still Elimelech and his family still should have davened for them. Like this, they said, you know what, these guys are so hopelessly corrupt. Forget about it. We can't stand them. Let's just get out of town. But Hashem is saying that's the wrong thing to do. The fact is, they should have realized that a Yid is a Yid. You don't give up on them, and you still daven for them. The Gemara continues, Omer Rav Bavachona Omer Rav Yechanan, Lo Shonu, this whole thing that we're talking about, when you're allowed and not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael in time of famine, this is only talking about Elamois Bezoil Operis Beyoker. Only if money is cheap, in other words, money is obtainable, but payrus are expensive because there's shortages of payrus. So in other words, you do have money available. You do have money. You are able to earn money. It's just that prices are inflated, and therefore it takes a lot more money to buy payers. Then we have the different possibilities that the Tanakhama and Reb Shimon had said that we learned yesterday when you would and wouldn't allow to leave Eretz Yisrael. But if money itself is hard to come by because prices and wages have gone so much down that nobody can earn anything, so then afilu omdu abas in besela, even if the prices are normal, you could buy 4 saw for a seller, but you don't have that seller, you don't have any money to buy that food, yoitzin, then that person could legitimately leave Eretz Yisrael under such conditions. So in other words, so like for example, you know, closer to modern times, an example of that would be, for example, like, you know, the Great Depression. There was food available, but people were out of work and nobody was earning anything. So that's the kind of thing that Rabbi Baba Chana is saying in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, then it would be legitimate to leave Eretz Yisrael under such conditions. The Amr Rabbi Yochanan, as Rabbi Yochanan himself says, Nehuna, I remember, Rabbi Yochanan lived a long time. Rabbi Shuda Goyen tells us that Rabbi Yochanan was the head Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael for 80 years. Dodos Rishonim, an important sefer of Jewish history, says maybe that's he brings based on various gemaras that may not be, it may be a mistake. Instead of 80, maybe it's supposed to be maybe pay for 80, maybe it's supposed to be samach for 60. But even 60 years of Rosh Hashiva means he lived quite a long time. There's some places where it says even more. There's places where it says that Rabbi Yochanan lived 300 or 400 years, which maybe that's a guzma, but still, he definitely lived a long time. The Gemara tells us in Nozir, for example, that one time they were discussing the whole matter for that it's going to be in Perakachot of Rambam in a few days that a man's not allowed to shave his armpits normally. So the Gemara mentions over there, one of the Chachamim says, Rabbi Yochanan, I saw him in the bathhouse, I noticed he didn't have hair in his armpits. What does that mean? And the other one answers, he was so old it fell out. So Rabbi Yochanan lived quite a long time, so now he's saying, I can remember from many years earlier when I was much younger, I remember when 4 saw would sell for a seller, which is the normal price. But and yet there were many people who were swollen from hunger in Tveria, which is where Rabbi Yochanan was from, midless Easter, because there was no Easter, there was no money available. There was a depression, and many people were out of work and couldn't earn money. So as much food as there was available, people couldn't afford it. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan, and then people were swollen from hunger. So therefore, we see that Rabbi Yochanan saying that's a legitimate reason to leave Eretz Yisrael and go someplace else where you can earn money and then come back. Since we mentioned a reminiscence of Rabbi Yochanan, so the Gemara goes on. The Gemara digresses to talk about some other reminiscences of his from when he was younger. For Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Nehuna, I remember. I remember when workers would refuse to be hired for jobs on the east side of town, on the east side of Tveria. Mereach pita meisin, because of the smell of the bread, they would die from it. Meaning, Rashbam explains, and Rashbam gives 2 explanations. One is that the wind from the west blowing towards the east would bring the smell of bread to the east of the city, and it was so good, and they felt such a craving from it that they would die from it. Yeah. The other explanation, Rashbam says, actually Rashbam says 2 possibilities. So that's the Rashbam prefers that explanation because it's telling us the shvach of Eretz Yisrael, telling us the praise of Eretz Yisrael. The bread, even the bread there, was so rich that just the smell of it wafting towards these people would cause them to die from craving for it. The other explanation Rashbam says is that they were hungry. Maybe it's a continuation of the previous one. People are working to be able to earn a few dollars, but they don't have enough food. They don't have food, and they don't have enough food, and therefore they smell this fragrance of the bread, and that kills them with hunger pangs. Is Rashbam's second and less preferred explanation. Now there's a footnote over here also in Ein Yaakov that says another point is that the fragrance of the bread itself was so satisfying that they said, we don't need to work. We don't need to work to earn money because we can fill up basically on the fragrance of the bread. According to that, the word meisin doesn't belong in here. It would just mean mireach pita. Because of the smell of the bread, they felt like they don't need to work, at least not on that side of the city. But Amar Rabbi Yechon, and Rabbi Yechon says, here's another one. Nehuna can have a bata yenuka charuva. I remember when a child could break open a carob, and you know, any of us have eaten carob on Tu B'Shvat or other times like that. It's fairly dry. Even fresh carobs are relatively dry. But in my younger years, Rabbi Yechanan says the carobs were so juicy. A thread of honey of syrup would ooze out onto his two arms. That's how juicy even the carobs were. Rabbi Yechanan say when he was younger. Rabbi Yechanan, by the way, we're saying he lived long. He was born around 100 years after the Churban, give or take. And he lived long, so closer to the time of the Churban, Eretz Yisrael still had a lot of the bracha that it had from the time of the Beis Hamikdash. It didn't disappear right away. It only gradually. The Gemara tells us at the end of Ksubas that there were a number of things about Zovas Chol of Dvash of Eretz Yisrael that persisted for a period of time, and then over time they disappeared. So Rabbi Yechon is saying that he remembers, for example, when even the carobs in Eretz Yisrael still had this bracha in them. What? This is Rabbi Yechon in plain, the Amora. The symbolism of it dripping on his two arms, Ben Yehoyada explains, it was in the schus of the mitzvahs that they did with their hands and arms, therefore they had this juiciness that would get all over their arms. By the way, there were other midrashim that mention similar concepts as well. For example, there's a midrash that tells about how one time there was a guy in the north of Eretz Yisrael, someplace in the Galil, I forget the name of the city, where he tells his son, go up to the second floor of the house, there's a barrel of dried figs over there, and bring me some. And the son goes up there, and he sticks his hand in, and it's all full of syrup and juice. And he calls down, there's no dried figs in here. And the father tells him, reach further down in, you'll find them. Even the dried figs were so juicy that that juice was oozing out of them. The Omer of Elazar, and Rav Elazar says in this connection also, Nehirna, I remember, had have a notel over Bisra. I remember when a raven would pick up a piece of meat, Nogid Chuta de Mishcha, Meirei Shurav Adla Ara, and there would be a line of fat oozing out of the meat from the top of the wall to the bottom of it. In other words, imagine, you know, the raven finds a piece of meat next to the wall, it swoops down and gets it and flies up to the top of the wall to perch there, and there would be this line of fat along where the meat had been. Because again, the meat was so fatty and juicy. Ben Yehoyada explains the symbolism in that also. The wall represents the Xeris and Takonis, that the Chamek as a Siog Latorda. People were being very careful with that in Rabbi Yechanan's younger years. Therefore, in the schus of that, they had the fat that would be along the height of the wall. The Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yechanan says another thing. Nehuna, I remember, Kad Havu Metailin, Talia, the Talisa B'Shuka. I remember when young men and women would play, or would Metailin can mean walk, or it can mean play, in the street. Kabashis Esrei, Kabashva Esrei, even at age 16 or 17, Velei Havu Chotan, and they wouldn't sin. They were so tzniyistic that they could be walking or playing together, and there would be no problem, and there would be no problem of the Yetzer Hara and of Znus between them. After 17, 18, it's after 16, 17, someplace else, I think, it's not over here, but someplace else, if I remember correctly, Maharshal says right here, that at 18 already, Ben Shimon asked for the chuppah, so then they're not playing together anymore, then they're of age to get married, but before that, yeah. The Omer of Yechanan, Nehuna, I remember from when I was younger, Kadavu Amrin, Bein Medrasha, they used to say in the Beis Medrash, Demoidi Lahoin, anyone who admits to them, to the Rishoyim, somebody who tries to chan for them and agree to what they say, Nofel B'Yedehan ends up falling into their hands. So in other words, Faket, Rashbam says, anytime you hear a Rosha say something, right away slog it up and don't pay any attention to what they have to say. Demistruchitz Aloihan, and if a person trusts in them, that he trusts, for example, he's going to tell them his secrets, delay Gilhoy, and what's right now his ends up becoming theirs. Rashban gives an example of that. We find that Chizkiyahu, when messengers from the king of Babel, Merodach Baladon, came to him to find out what had happened with the nest, with the sun standing still, the pasuk tells how Chizkiyah showed him all his treasures, the Medrash says he even opened up the Oren and showed them the Luchas, and Yeshaya comes and tells him in Nevuah, one day people from Babel are going to come and take all these treasures and carry them off to Babel, which happened at the time of the Churban, 100 years later. The Malbim actually says on the Pesukim over there what happened was, now for the first time, until then, Babel had nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael, they're very far away. Now for the first time, they discovered this tremendous riches in Eretz Yisrael. So that got into their head that, you know what, one day when we're powerful, we should come and take this. And eventually they did. So you see, in other words, that a person, so he relied on them, he figured that he's at peace with them, and therefore he can show off in front of them, then they end up getting jealous of him and taking it all away from him. Maharsho explains, interestingly, in this connection, when we have Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, that you have a person who has chochmosa meruba b'maisa, it's like a tree without enough roots, and it ends up falling over, as opposed to maisa meruba b'chochmosa, then he'll last and he'll withstand any kind of strong winds. And he explains that this actually has to do with this Gemara over here. We don't mean chochma of Torah per se, we just mean a chochma in milad alma. When a person works in this world, and he has tremendous chokhma in being a shtadlan and being in dealing with the government, but he's not just a baal, he's not a baal maisim, he just relies on his chokhma, then that's asher ora geber, asher yiftach ba'adam, and he winds up falling over. As opposed to when he has kosher maisim, merum nechachmasa, the example, a classic example being Nochum Mishgamzu, where they're bali maisim, and they're not so, they don't take care to have such great chokhma, they mainly trust in Hashem, so then they're secure, and then they're secure, and then they'll withstand anything. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Chaf Zayin Oder Aleph, before the Geulah Amitis Vashlema, that ever once said in Yechidus, Aaron Derb Halperin, the editor of Kfar Chabad, once told us over, that before the Geulah Amitis Vashlema, we're going to have again the famous showdown between Eliyahu HaNavi and the Nevi'a Baal that there was on Har HaKamel. Well, who's the real one? Hashem Elokim L'chu Achrav, V'im HaBaal Chas V'Shalom L'chu Achrav. Now, what happened then is the fire didn't come down by them. Instead, it came down on Eliyahu's side, and everybody said, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. That ever said, right before the Geulah, the same thing is going to happen again, but this time the fire was going to come down on the Nevi'a Baal side. So now you're going to have people who are going to think that this is going to be the final, the ultimate test for the Jewish people. Nevertheless, we're not going to be confused and not chas v'shalom, follow the Baal, but nevertheless still announce Hashem who are the king, Hashem who are the king, and still have bitachon and amunah and eivishter. Chav Zayin Oder Beis. There's the concept of mitzvahs betelus la'asid lover. The Gemara says that there's an opinion that mitzvahs are going to be bottle in the future. So that means in the time of Tchias HaMesim, the second period of Yemos Mashiach. During the first period before Tchias HaMesim, then Faker, the Rambam explains, we're going to be doing mitzvahs in Tachos HaShlemos. Now, therefore, because of this, is why you have a practical din from this, that you're allowed to use shatnez for Tachrichim, because by the time the Mesim come alive, by Tchias HaMesim, it won't matter mitzvahs betelus anyway. So what does that mean? So we'll continue the next installment tomorrow. Beis Hashem, the Rebbe talks about what does this mean. I mean, a Torah is like Hayim Chlepes. So what does that actually mean that mitzvahs will be bottled? Okay. Speaking of speaking of begodim, speaking of tzitzis, then we talked about yesterday that if a person puts a second tzitzah on a corner that already has one, then it's bal tosif. But now if he cuts off either one and removes either one, then the other one remains kosher. It's not considered tassav lemin asri. The same way, for example, we talked about earlier that a garment always has a maximum of four tzitzis. Even if it's a five-cornered garment, you still put maximum four tzitzis on it. Suppose that it had five corners and you put tzitzis on all five corners that you weren't supposed to. If afterwards you cut off one of them, doesn't matter which one, then the talus is still kosher for the same reason. It's not tassav lemin asri because right now the asiya is in fact taking off that one that's possible, and all the other ones are still kosher, and it's considered that the asiyah of them was done when it was kosher.